You are listening to the podcast That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige, with me, your host, Lisa Orsimäki. I want to welcome to the program Dr. Mikael Jensen. He's an author. He's also a senior lecturer here at the Department of Pedagogy and Special Pedagogy at the University of Gothenburg. He's also a colleague of mine. Welcome, Mikael, and how are you?
Thank you very much. I am fine. I'm excited to be part of your pod.
Oh, wonderful. And I'm excited to have you part of my podcast. So, Mikael, to get a sense about a little bit about who you are, who is Mikael Jensen?
Okay. Sometimes I say I'm a multi-talented person, but it just means that I'm a person that likes to... I'm curious about a lot of things. And I have studied more than one area. So I think that's a good way to capture the person, Mikael.
Okay. So what are the areas you've been studying when you say there's a few areas that you...
Yeah. First of all, when I was working with my dissertation, it was the field of cognitive development. So I studied preschool children and the one in the beginning of the school ages, in the school years. Their cognitive development was my focus in the beginning. And later on, I started to focus rather on learning. I mean, learning is a part of cognitive development, so it was not a very big step. But during this time, I was also, or rather always, part of a research group that had a lot of interest in communication and communication studies. So I turned towards that direction also. So first cognitive development, then learning, and then communication. And the last field of interest, maybe my major field today, alongside communication, is leadership. So I have covered a lot of difficult areas, I think.
Yes. And now you published a book titled, and in Swedish, it's one word, everyone. It's called Ledarskapskommunikation. In English, roughly translated, it's leadership, two words, leadership and communication. So, Mika, what led you to write the book in the first place?
Yeah, I think it was... because I was both studying communication in organizations and at the same time I was teaching a lot in a program called Mastering Communication. So I was in an environment where I was thinking about communication almost all the time, since I had to plan lectures and I had seminars and discussions with students on advanced levels, what you call postgraduate. Also, a lot of my colleagues were doing research that concerned organizations or leadership. So it was a kind of a natural thing to do for me to deepen my understanding about how we communicate within groups and organizations, and of course, how we communicate as leaders and as followers. Mm-hmm. So I did some studies, mainly a survey that gave me a lot of good material. And when I had analyzed that, I thought that, well, this material is useful for more than me and my students and my colleagues. So I started to write a manuscript, and later on it became a book with two parts, and the second part is based on my own research, and the first part is more focused on organizational understanding and how you lead on different levels in, within the organization. So that was the main idea why I wanted to write this book based on this survey.
So who did you survey?
Yeah, and that is very interesting because even if I'm interested in leadership, you can't have leadership without followership. So I asked people that were in follower positions what they needed from their leaders in the communication between leader and follower. So mostly followers, but some individuals are also have also experience of being leaders, but they in turn are followers to other leaders. I mean,
yes,
they are not the CEO of a company, but maybe middle leaders in an organization.
So what is a good leader? What did you come up with?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a very broad question to me, since I have a view on leadership that we can acquire competences that helps us to be good leaders. And then the question would be, what kind of competences do you need?
That's right.
Yeah. So I think that we need both generic competences, meaning competences that you can use in almost any type of organization and in on any level in an organization. So like communication, for example, you have to be a good communicator as a leader. So that's a generic competence. But then you also have some specific competences, meaning that you need to understand the organization, the core of the organization that you are leading. What do they mainly do? When you have that core understanding together with an understanding of how to formulate a goal and strive towards that goal and attain that goal, and generic competences like how you create good relationships, how you motivate people, and also an ethical concern, I think. I haven't written a lot about the last thing, but I think it's important when you talk about a good leader. It's kind of a normative question, so you have to think about ethics, I think.
Thinking about Sweden, do you think there are different leadership styles that outside Sweden that may differ from how leadership is here in Sweden?
I think. First of all, I want to say that I don't often use the term leadership style, only when I give lectures about different communication models, like, for example, Kurt Levine and people like that talk about style, since it's focusing on the behavior as such. I'm also focusing on the knowledge behind the behavior when I talk about competence. But anyway, yeah, I think there are differences, and I am one of those that actually embrace at least parts of the dimensions that Hofstadter are talking about to get a better understanding about what makes cultures or national cultures differ from each other. And two of them that are kind of common knowledge today is the difference between individualism and collectivism, and on the other hand, we have power distance. You can have high power distance or low power distance, and Sweden is a very strange middle thing on these two dimensions. And if I compare to, for example, USA, they have higher levels of individualism, and I think also higher levels of power distance compared to Sweden. And if I compare to China, for example, they have lower levels of individualism, more collectivistic, and also higher levels of power distance. So I think that these three cultures just have to have different kinds of leadership to function in an optimal way. So in USA, they are probably more stronger and more charismatic. They want to take the lead in a very obvious way. In China, they are more like a father figure that takes care of the family when they are leading. While we in Sweden, maybe we are some middle ground, but I think Swedish leaders are also in a difficult position since we always want to be part of the decision making. And that slows down a lot of processes in Swedish organizations. And because of that, I think that some leaders don't dare to invite all the coworkers in their organization to be part of the decision making. So it's some kind of dilemma there. We want it as followers, mm-hmm. but we don't really get it. So we become upset. Mm-hmm.
So, and what you are referring to is the democratic process.
Some kind of democratic process, yes. We're concerned about that in Sweden. We want to take part.
Is there a particular person, a leader, that you consider have got great communication skills?
Oh, I was not prepared for that question. to be honest, I don't think so. I mean, we have some politicians in Sweden that are good at rhetorics, but it's not necessarily the same thing as being a good communicator or having good communication skills. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a person that I kind of see in front of me every time I think about the good leader to have all these skills. No, I don't think so. Actually, I have some bad examples, but they are not from Sweden. One of them is Elon Musk, so I hope he's not listening and becoming upset. I know that it's in one of the biographies about him that it says that he took classes in rhetorics. But when I listen to him, when he's presenting a new Tesla model, for example, he's not talking like a good speaker. He's stuttering and things like that. So I'm not convinced about his mission and that he's a charismatic person. Mm-hmm. So to me, he's doing the opposite, but still he has a lot of followers that want to support his mission.
Yes. And why do you think that is?
Why they support his mission?
Yeah. Why do you think because when we think about a leader, they don't necessarily have to be good speakers, but they still are doing things in order to generate the followers that, for example, Elon Musk have. I have no whether I like his style or anything. He's certainly not a leader that I would say is a great speaker. I'm thinking about totally different people. But so I'm curious to know that because you are recognizing that he has got followers, that he must be doing something something right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think he has a vision that is appealing to a lot of people. And he has also, I think he's good at formulating goals that his followers can recognize and they want to achieve it together with him. So there is something good about the way that he communicates,
yes.
Because he communicates about the importance of the mission, importance of the goals that he wants to achieve. Mm. And that is, I think, his strength.
Yes. And what about, do you have anyone else in mind that you consider is a bad communicator and yet is achieving some, some followers? And there are plenty of examples, but from your perspective, it would be interesting to know who else.
I often take George W. Bush as an example in my teaching because I'm not the first person to mention that he kind of has a stone face. When I talk about, or also when I write about some of these competences that I think a good leader should have, being as expressive is one of them. And he is just the opposite of being expressive. He has a stone face. He doesn't react very much when people ask him things. I mean, you can't see in his face if it is a positive or negative response going on. And that doesn't make him charismatic either. But of course, I mean, he was elected president, so he has to have a lot of followers that likes his ideas.
And it could be because he's a Republican, and Republicans have certain ideas that they differ from the Democrats in the U.S. And so what about here in Sweden?
Yes, I mean, some decades ago, we had the leader of SAS, SAS, the air company. He also wrote a book about how he became the kind of leader that he was. And I think he had at least some of those necessary components to make a good leader within that particular kind of organization, and also in the way that he was communicating. He had a lot of values that appealed to people. They wanted to follow him. So I think he was some kind of charismatic person, and he had some interesting ideas that people wanted to work with. Jan Carlson. I'm talking about Jan Carlson.
All right. That is really interesting when you think about communication skills. And I haven't actually thought about it the way you are speaking about it. But to explain then communication skills, now you suggest a theory that is called touchpoint management theory. Can you explain what it is so that then we can get a sense of what do you mean when someone is a good communicator, or how do we work, how do we understand communication from a theoretical perspective?
Yeah, first of all, I need to say that the idea of touch point is more often used within the field of marketing. So anyone that would recognize this term might associate it with marketing, but I'm talking about a touch point that makes my ideas touch your mind, in a sense, or my mind to get in touch with your mind.
Okay.
So that's what a touch point it is to me. And usually it is when we're talking face to face, usually that is the appearance of the other person. You can see him or her, and you can even maybe smell him or her. You can hear the person. Most of my senses are activated. So that is probably the optimal touch point where my thoughts and my mind can get in touch with your thoughts and your mind. But we also have text-based communication, for example, or we can use a phone like today. And we have a lot of combinations of these. I mean, sometimes I can pick up my mobile phone and I can show you a picture of my cat.
Yes.
And then I can talk about the cat. So you can get different types of information that I want to share with you based on what I say with my mouth and based on what I show you on my display. So the idea with a touch point is that I do what I think is necessary to make you activate the right thoughts in your mind. if you misinterpret what I'm saying now, it might sound like manipulation, but it's nothing like that. It's just the core idea of communication.
Right.
I mean, why should I communicate if it doesn't activate anything that is similar to the idea that I want to share with you? So communication to me is sharing ideas, and a touch point is the best way to do that in a certain situation.
Yeah. So for me, it sounds like it's about connecting.
Yeah,
it's about connecting.
It is about connecting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, since I have the idea that we are intentional beings, the question is always, what is my intention behind the communication? What is the goal that I want to achieve by giving you certain information? And if I have that perspective, then the touch point can actually be a tool. Maybe it's best to meet you face to face to give you certain information. Or maybe I can send you a series of photographs and some text combined to that.
Right. So in order to get my message across, I really should have pictures, or I need to meet with you face to face rather than just taking time to listen and trying to work out through listening.
Okay, if we talk about communication skills, I would say that it's both. Of course, we have to have listening skills, and it's especially important when we talk about leaders, since there have been ways to measure how much you talk and how much you listen, and leaders actually listen more than people do in general. So the listening skill have to be developed among leaders. Mm. So you have to be a good listener. And I think everybody have to be a good listener, but maybe especially when you're a leader. So that's one of the skills that we can talk about. And the other is to know how to express an idea so that it can activate the right kind of thinking in the other person. And maybe it is to meet face to face, but I'm not saying that the visual communication is more important than the auditive information. I'm just saying to be skilled means that you know what kind of combinations that are the most useful in a certain situation.
You teach both undergraduate and postgraduate courses, and one of them is a pedagogical leadership course for the undergraduate course. And I'm just curious, how do you explain pedagogical leadership?
Okay, well, since I am giving lectures in different programs at the university, maybe I would twist it a little bit depending on who is the audience, but I have two general answers to that question. The first one is pedagogical leadership is when a leader is creating an opportunity for a follower to learn, and that could be in any kind of organization, for example. So that's the first very simple answer. The second answer is that it's connected to the educational system, meaning that it is the pupils that are supposed to learn, and also students when we talk about university level. And to lead pedagogical processes means that you could be a principal, for example, that is supporting teachers to in their turn help students or pupils to learn. So it's more of an organizational concern at a school specifically. And so that is the specific explanation of what pedagogical leadership is. And of course, a principal has a lot of influence on how students or pupils learn. So So it's some kind of chain reaction or a circular reaction. Mm.
So do you, I mean, teaching both undergraduate and postgraduate students, what are the differences, how the students think about leadership?
I think it is the understanding of how organizations work. A lot of undergraduate students have a more naive idea about how to lead and how to learn and things like that. But when you are a postgraduate student, you have passed some courses that involve organizations and how organizations work and the idea of organizational development and things like that. So I think that that understanding puts leadership in another kind of context, meaning that I can talk about leadership in another way to those students. Mm.
So in order to engage students, and it doesn't matter if it, well, yes, I'm thinking now of undergraduate. How do you engage them in learning about pedagogical leadership or leadership?
I mean, if I have a group of let's say, 25 students, I actually ask every one of them, what kind of experience from organizations do they have? What kind of work experience do they have?
Yes.
So when they have told me, I usually use examples that can relate to some of these types of organizations that are presented when they are telling me. So I use their everyday experience to put my ideas that I want to teach them in a context or a situation that they can relate to rather quickly. So that's the main idea of how I teach these undergraduate students to put it in a situation that they can relate to. Use examples that I can relate to, and my main communication tool to use clarity. And clarity is not simple. It's, I would say, really difficult, but it's one of these communication skills that teachers should spend time on developing.
Mm. And what about postgraduate students?
I do it in a similar way, but I think they have more abstract understanding, meaning that they can actually talk about things on a more abstract level. Mm. But if I see that they don't follow what I'm talking about, they're not understanding me, then I try to turn it around to take their perspective instead and work with that.
Yeah. Now, thinking about artificial intelligence and ChatGPT or chatbot, what are your thoughts about artificial intelligence in teaching and learning?
Okay. First of all, I have to say that, as I said before, I talk about intentional beings. It's very important to me that we have intentions and we try to understand others' intentions. So when learning to me is intentional, it's not accidental or something that just happens. You have some kind of intention to learn a certain thing. Sometimes you fail, of course, but still you want to achieve something specific. And as a teacher, I could use the, I try to take the perspective of the learner. What is that person trying to achieve? Mm. Or what is that person trying to learn? Mm. And that is my way to be an intentional teacher or have intentional teaching. And always when I teach, I have some idea that I want to not transmit, but share with others. And hopefully they understand my intention. So we have some kind of very, very human interaction, giving intentions, sharing intentions, guessing intentions from the other part, trying to understand the intentions, doing that. And I think that AI can do a lot of things today to support students learning or pupils learning, but they are still not intentional beings. And because of that, we cannot have a fruitful interaction where we actually support each other in the learning and understand what the teacher is trying to teach and what the learner is trying to learn. That kind of interaction is not yet possible. But I think that we can program AI or we can have AI that can learn itself to come a bit closer. But I don't know how far we are from making AI intentional beings in the way that humans are.
Now that's a really interesting interesting question, because that's something that I've been also thinking about. I'm wondering about how is AI actually, it's not supportive of students' creativity.
Yeah, it's a key word here, I would say, to fail. I'm a bit inspired by Amy Edmondson. She's a professor that is studying how teams become creative or innovative in the way that they are developing things. She is using an expression that I think, even if I'm not using exact the same words, but the meaning is the same, and that is to fail well.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and that is how you can, during a process, learn from failure to reach something new and really useful. So I think that is something that AI haven't reached yet, but something that involves both the idea of leadership and learning and interaction or communication. So to me, that is very interesting, of course, with my background, to see how groups of individuals can fail well to create something new. But just one thing, I think that one thing that AI is actually supporting today, that is to give some kind of feedback that actually can help us learn or develop. For example, the way we write. If we ask the AI the right kind of question, it can actually give us supportive answers. And feedback is something that I would say is a key component also when we talk about communication, when we talk about learning, when we talk about leadership and creating new things. So feedback has to be there. And I think actually that AI can support that.
Mm. So you are not at all, as an educator, threatened by AI?
No, I don't think so. I have open eyes and open ears to what's going on, just to be cautious.
Okay, all right.
But open eyes and open ears also means I'm open to see what might happen, and it might be a positive development.
Mm. Or it might not be, and that's okay too.
Yeah, we have to deal with that anyway.
Exactly. So in the end, this is the final question. Is there anything that you want to add to the conversation that you think is important and that I have not mentioned?
Well, you actually asked me a question beforehand that I never got the opportunity to answer. And that's the question about who is the target group of my latest book.
Okay.
So the target group, I would say, is first of all, people that are working within the educational system, like, for example, principals, what we call first teachers.
Okay.
Also, But since it's about such general things as communicating, I would say that it's the target group is much wider than this. It's actually for everyone that is in a leader position and want to develop that part of his or her leadership.
Okay, and it's also available for students, isn't it?
It is.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be used in a course during the fall that is about health promotion. So how to lead others working with health.
Wow.
So it could be useful also in that area.
Yeah, so it's really to all areas, so it's not only one particular topic or subject.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think it's so general.
Yes. And you are now looking forward to the summer holidays. I suppose you're in the middle of examinations.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's what's going on. Closing the course that I'm responsible of, and also other courses that I'm teaching and examining in.
Yes, I know.
Exactly.
I know. But look, so have you got any plans for the summer, upcoming summer here in Sweden? Or
yes, I'm going to read a lot. Well, this summer I'm going to focus on spending a Swedish holiday in Sweden. But probably I will visit also Poland and Germany for a week.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I think so. Mm.
Thank you so much, Mikael, for your time this afternoon, and have a great rest of afternoon.
Thank you.
And you have been listening to the podcast Sånt är livet i Sverige, or in English, That's Life Here in Sweden, with me, Lisa Orsimäki. Till next time, take care of yourself and each other. Bye for now.